We're back with Taz Daughtry, and today we're looking at, in this observatory type of function that Taz has adopted, some headlines that have been in the news that involve software testing or software quality. And Taz has a few headlines he's going to look at. Taz, thanks for joining us, and jump right in.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. In probably our most recent newsletter, we looked at a couple of these. I think one of them was called a headline you want to avoid. It was before the midterm elections, because in some of the primaries, there had been a number of problems with the voting technology. The headline that you want to avoid that we said was, paper says, debut of Johnson County's new voting systems devolves into a debacle. And no one wants a debacle. essentially, and I had a lot of concern. I was tracking on this a lot with my my cybersecurity class at the college in advance of the elections. And I think a lot of people were dissatisfied or didn't realize in one way how fragile our voting system is, just the whole overall way of the votes. And obviously Florida never disappoints us with recounts. It wasn't hanging chads, but there were some other issues there. And there have been a lot of concerns that when people go to electronic voting systems, they don't have the kind of confidence. You get a lot of efficiency, but you don't have the confidence that you could when you actually had paper ballots. And so there's a lot of interest and concern. I don't think we had real disasters on election day, but I think there's quite a movement where we either are going to need to find a more seamless way to handle the elections, or we need to have more confidence in the voting machines. We do have a problem in that there are a relatively very small number of vendors. There's an even smaller number of certification laboratories that do the testing. So basically, this happens at a state-by-state level, and then individual jurisdictions within the state, city, or the county level. So it's a real patchwork quilt here. While there's some attempt to try to give a little more guidance at a national level, there's a lot of resistance to that. So I think there are going to be a lot of opportunities, if you will, to be concerned about and to be looking at how well we can count on the voting system. And to the extent there is some testing involved, the way in which we need to be aware of those variations that happen just from election to election, from ballot to ballot, and it's a one-shot deal. You get one chance on election day. You don't get a do-over. So there's a lot of pressure and a lot of attention there. So I think maybe it wasn't as disastrous as some people had feared, but there's going to be a lot of movement and concern that we either try to bulletproof the election machinery in terms of there being electronic voting and ways in which people even talking about internet voting, which really frightens me, ways in which we may be able to use technology. But people need to have a lot of confidence. And that's where testing is going to have to provide that confidence, that you feel comfortable, that people don't feel even after the election, it's a close election, you do recounts and all that, that people can stand by those results. And so I think that would be one component that would be very helpful for us to be looking at, and maybe some specialized attention to testing down at the individual jurisdictional levels. I'm not quite sure whether we're going to have a proliferation of these certification laboratories that have sort of dwindled to only a handful, but that's certainly going to be an issue. And again, we won't get excited about it till about too soon before the next election cycle. So, unfortunately, we wind up getting surprised that keeps coming around. Well, we had another headline. Go ahead.
Let me jump in on that one for just a moment. I did see a follow-up story where a couple of governors, states, and I don't recall the states' names, had actually moved away from the possibility of any electronic voting, and they were mailing all ballots, receiving all ballots back via the mail, and they were advocating this as a foolproof method, which seems a rather draconian approach to what is normally a very technology forward society. So they were advising other governors to literally throw away their voting machines and simply go back to the old hand counted method. So I think the stakes are very high, and I know this is just voting, but I think you know, it could flow into other things as well. The mantle, the weight that testers carry in deciding major factors like this, I think is something they don't always realize. It's a big deal.
And there are a lot of components, by the way. If you recall the way the Florida recount goes, at a certain level, they do a machine recount, which means they feed these ballots back into a machine. Mm. And there was such a demand, they literally burned up the machine. Mm. The machines overheated, because again, they had a lot of ballots to check and they had a very short time span in which to do it. And then they go to a manual recount on that. So again, it's pretty remarkable the system works as well as it does, but I think the issue here is with all testing is to give people a level of confidence that you have evaluated and it's good enough to be used. And here the standard, the standard is pretty high and the stakes are pretty high. So to help give people the confidence in the election system, I think that's certainly going to be a nice approach, an obligation for testers. Mm-hmm. A second headline we had, which I think we had, what's worse than a bad headline, was having to testify about your public failures yeah. before a legislative panel. This happened in the UK. And it turns out that, again, we're a very global economy. And so sometimes, I'm not saying we go to the lowest level, but the more intense level, and this is in the UK, and in Europe, we have much more concern about some of the privacy issues. Both the British Parliament and the European Union are raking Facebook over the coals right now. There are lots of places where their bad behavior or the inappropriate behavior can lead to fines and, of course, just to shaming people. So the case here is that essentially an inadequate job of doing testing when you're rushing to do a major, in this case, a cut over to a new banking system, mm-hmm. Which not only makes a lot of customers unhappy and causes a lot of concerns, so they lose access to their online banking, for example. Interesting thing here was during that particular chaos, there were many more times of people attempting to do fraud. Uh-huh. I think in that case, there were 70 times more fraud attacks than in the usual day-to-day activity. So, when there's chaos, the guys that want to take advantage of that chaos will rush in there. Mm-hmm. So the point is, there's not just the loss of the image of your company. There's not just the loss of your business opportunities. It's not just the possible loss of customers, but there are cases that people now are actively trying to take advantage of these problems. So when there is a situation where there's been some inadequate testing, then all of these things happen. And then on top of that, the regulatory and the legislative oversight, the types of fines that could be involved, and of course, a bad situation in one country or one segment spills over into the others as well. And so I don't have some solid numbers. They've been floated around in a number of cases, but literally how much either the stock price devalues or in some cases smaller companies particularly go out of business when there's some sort of problem, particularly a security breach where there's been inadequate testing and inadequate controls in place for that. So the point is now you have many, many levels of exposure and many, many levels of recognition that you didn't do a good job. And so the eyes of the world are upon you
right,
that way.
Right. And I've seen some of those numbers that have been bandied about, and they're not insignificant. They're huge numbers, and perhaps more to the heart of some of the listeners of this podcast, the number of or the salary of the CEO went to zero, you know, not too many weeks after this. So that's an important number as well.
Yeah. One other headline, it's an item I haven't written up in detail yet, but I was looking at going back to the observatory function and looking for issues that are emerging. One of the concerns we have with machine learning in the aspect of artificial intelligence is that basically the image is that a lot of this is a black box. That is, you don't have visibility into the innards. When you're writing code, there is actual source code, and you can go over it line by line, and you can examine it, and you can test it in different ways, and you can see what's happening, and you can imagine ways that it might go wrong or that someone might stress it in a certain way. A lot of machine learning, you basically pump a lot of inputs into a black box, and an answer comes out. And it is an issue from a testing point of view. The classic description of that is we don't have an oracle. We don't have the way to decide what is the right answer. The reason you're putting this into that system is because it's too complex or it's too ambiguous for us to find some specific A to B to C to D. So we do some pattern recognition. We do some training of the system, and it comes out with an answer. What was encouraging in the recent headline I've just been seeing is that they're basically trying to open up the black box. It's called transparency. And so essentially, before someone should be allowed to put a machine learning application controlling the fate of individuals or economies or lives, we should have more visibility into that. And this goes all the way back to how are hiring and firing decisions being made, how are medical diagnoses being made, how are we deciding to give this treatment or not this treatment to these patients given these symptoms. And if we use a machine learning when we don't really understand what's happening inside that black box, we're really at the mercy of whatever magic is going on. I mean, it isn't magic, but from our point of view, we don't understand why the answer comes out. So it is encouraging. We're concerned more about so-called the ethics of machine learning, because if you put in a biased data set, you can get a biased result out again. That could be, could be an issue in admitting people to college or jobs or any number of other decisions you might make that have financial or medical implications. But I'm encouraged that at least there is an opening for testers to have more insight and visibility and therefore to make more of a contribution in that particular environment. So as we are trying to move, the buzzword is transparency. As we're trying to get more transparency in what's happening in a machine learning environment, the insights are there more nearly than we have had in the past, not all the way down to individual lines of code that you could look at and think about how you would test, but at least having more insight so that you can imagine some test scenarios, some test data that would expose some weaknesses or some unreliability in the results. So that was an encouraging, and I'm going to track that headline a little bit more and see if the machine learning gets a little bit out of the black box. We see a little more visibility into it, a little more transparency. From a tester's point of view, how they can be more contributing down to that level of detail that they haven't been in the past.
Oh, that's really interesting. And again, it's just another opportunity opening a door for testers, and the importance of testing is evident throughout all of those headlines. So Taz, once again, thank you for taking time to speak with us on this podcast, and we look forward to hearing more of your observatory thoughts and comments in future podcasts.
Okay, I'll keep my eyes open. Thank you very much, Dave.